You're listening to the Very Serious Crafts podcast.
We're very serious crafters,
and we craft very serious crafts.
Very serious.
Hello, and welcome to episode 6 of the Very Serious Crafts podcast. I'm Molly from Wild Olive.
Heidi here from Hands Occupied.
And I'm Haley from Red Handled Scissors. Today, we're discussing summer, seasonal and patriotic crafts, as well as a film about Iranian rug making.
We also want you to know how much we love connecting with you on social media. You can jump into crafty discussions with us on Instagram at Serious Crafts and find all of our social media links at veryseriouscrafts.com. And with the social part of this in mind, what's happening, ladies?
Well, being a crafter is weird. Which I don't have to tell you two of all of my friends how weird it can be to be a crafter.
You don't say.
No. So yesterday I had a photo shoot for a magazine, and usually when I do these things and you do these things, like, you take pictures of your hands mostly. Like, you make sure, like, that your cuticles don't look like they've been chewed on and that your nails are done and whatever. And, like, I remember to take off my useful but not the cutest looking thing in the world, my Apple Watch.
And I never remember to take mine off.
Yeah, I always think it's lost when I take it off, but whatever. So all that to say, normally you take a picture of your hands doing things, in my case, with knitting needles and crochet hooks and yarn most of the time, right? So yesterday, this photo shoot I did, it was the first one that I had to, like, model for real in. Which I was like,
oh, like your face?
Yeah, like my face. And I do a lot of video work, and that's one thing, because you're, like, talking and trying to be like a normal human. But when you're modeling, you're like, is my face normal? Is this how a person stands? Do I smile weird? Who knows?
Like, I mean, you do now, because now you're thinking about it.
Yeah. And, like, how high up are my shoulders getting? The more tense I'm feeling and self-conscious I'm feeling, etc. So the only good thing about this strange modeling experience, I guess, is it was literally a back to school themed photo shoot for a magazine. And I've mentioned this before in the podcast. I was a librarian for like 8 years. So I feel like if I had to do a modeling job, which sounds super weird to say, I think that my experiences professionally as a librarian and also my unsurprisingly librarian-ish wardrobe, I think, prepared me my entire life to be ready for this photo shoot. I literally have, like, an 80s bow shirt and, like, a high-waisted, like, pencil skirt. It was perfect. But once they were like, okay, we got some pictures of you, like, looking normal, they handed me an apple and were like, could we get you to take a bite out of this in a picture?
Wait, what?
Yeah. I'm like 99% sure there's no way that picture is making the magazine. Like, when they went to take the picture, the, like, photo director and the photographer both kind of went like, ooh.
Yeah, that would be but not something
what were
I would
you
want
doing?
Taking a picture of me doing.
I think I looked really angry, and then there was, like, I think, like, apple juice dripping down my face.
Oh, yeah. Clearly you were not working with the camera there.
No, and I probably was making, like, just a bad face in general. But in the end, I got some bonus payment in the form of getting to eat the rest of that apple and all the lipstick that was all over it as a snack.
Oh, no. Oh, an apple is acidic and sticky. Oh, no. I bet your lipstick was in fine form after that.
And then I was like, fine I have to form. Wash my hands if you want me to handle yarn for the next picture.
Yeah. And maybe
because
your arms.
Because always
was
a crafter.
Yeah. Oh. It was juicy. Anyway, so that's what I did yesterday with my life.
Wow.
So, yeah, how about you guys?
Well, I guess I can bring it in with another vaguely gross thing. Specifically the moths that you have all now heard my story about, the tale of woe. So As you guys know, I was super nervous about actually talking about it because I was really embarrassed about... I guess I really thought that people were going to judge me and think that I was just a mess. And instead, I have received, since we released that episode, so many, like, just individual personal notes, like emails and Instagram messages from people who had listened, who were telling me about their own stories and how hearing about it either inspired them to check their stashes and see if there was anything going on, or really made them feel like they weren't alone in having that problem. And it was, it ended up being like this really nice moment that I kind of wasn't expecting. Like, I expected people to be like, ugh, that girl. I didn't really expect people to be like, oh my gosh, me too. Thanks for making me not feel alone.
Aww.
And
that's
it was
so nice.
It was really
it.
Heartwarming. And I feel a little emotional about it.
Aww. That's really great.
Yeah. So how are you, Molly? What's going on?
As a tear runs silently down your cheek.
Haley's all like sweet and nice, and you guys, it's all wonderful. And I'm like going to say something, ugh, because we're going back to it. But my biggest news was this week I had a wisdom tooth removed. And it was my second one to be removed. I don't want to do these like in bulk or anything. They don't offer a bulk discount on teeth removal. So, and I'm cheap. So I'm like, I'll only do it if you like absolutely make me. But yeah, so I had that out a couple days ago. And essentially it's meant that I've been really hungry because it's just hard to eat certain things. And of course, naturally, this would be the time when I would just really, really crave a big platter of nachos. And that's just not happening. So I'm hungry. It's really warm here, so I've been a little bit off and cranky. And I'm also on amoxicillin, which can just throw me just a bit. So I'm just here to warn you that if I am just sort of vacant or forget words again while recording, it's just going to be amplified. I guess it's normal for me, but it's just me multiplied. So fair warning.
Wait, what word did you forget?
Thread.
I forgot thread.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, my mom actually has warned me. She's like, you know, that's pretty normal, like with menopause. And I was like, excuse me? let's not go there.
Now. That was uncalled for.
Exactly. Thank you. Anyway, moving
That's
right
really
along,
funny.
Let's jump into this. And Heidi, you mentioned going to see this film. And as soon as I heard about it, actually, I'm going to set this up by saying Heidi mentioned this film, which she will describe, and she followed it up by saying, I'm embarrassingly excited about this, to which I said, I don't think there's a level of excitement that requires being embarrassed about this because it sounds so awesome. So, Heidi, tell us all about it.
Well, Molly, you're very sweet. So, there's this film called Gaba. I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly. Apologies if I'm butchering it. And it's this film from 1996 that was made in Iran, and it's about traditional rug making. So gabas, or gaba, G-A-B-B-A, is how it's spelled sometimes, but generally it's spelled G-A-B-B-E-H. Spelling lesson for you guys who aren't up on your Iranian vocabulary. But these gaba rugs are a traditional rug making style done in Iran, and they're traditionally also made by women. So in this art house film from 1996, there's this nomadic family that does what nomads do. They travel around setting up camp and just living their lives in this clan sort of environment with generally really large families and extended family all working together. And the family in this film, they had, gosh, I think one set of, like, one uncle had 7 kids and the other uncle had 9 kids, and they were all working together to raise a flock of sheep. They had some goats. And then time and time again, the characters would come back to making the gaba, and the gaba was this kind of symbol of one of the main characters. And this film, actually, my husband, Ed, actually, he subscribes to the Chicago Film Society's email newsletter because he's a big film nerd. Like, for fun, he will go to, like, a nitrate film festival in upstate New York by himself. I was like, you can go without me. I have a bunch of work I can do that weekend. And so he was like, oh, this is about rug making, and you keep, you know, poking at that latch hook or whatever it's called. And I was like, yes, because I'll put the trailer in the show notes for this episode. The trailer is gorgeous. And this film is actually pretty hard to find, to get a screening of. So before the film screened, the curator of the series from the Chicago Film Society was like, yeah, we make a habit of going on eBay and buying 35 millimeter film prints from like old film production houses that have gone out of business. And so a lot of their films, because it was before a lot of these things were getting digitized right away as just like the workflow of film production, a lot of these films only exist on film prints that are just like randomly in old like art house basements or storage spaces.
And disintegrating,
yeah.
Yeah.
So this film, like, you can find it on YouTube, but most often there aren't any English subtitles and they're like a really bad image quality. So I felt really lucky that I was able to find this. I was posting about seeing this film on social media, and I've gotten a bunch of like private messages on Instagram and Twitter from Iranians in Chicago being like, OMG, I can't believe this is a thing that they're screening. And I was like, yes, you should come.
That is so cool.
So it was really cool. So I should probably like step back instead of just geeking out about like how I got to see this film that's really hard to see. Like, sucks to be anybody else. Like, that's not what I'm trying to say.
This is a film, not a documentary, right?
Yes, it's a film. I at first assumed it was going to be a documentary, which I was also like clap, 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 so excited for.
Yeah, I was assuming that this whole time until like about 2 seconds ago. Yeah, okay. So okay.
I'm good at explaining today.
No, it just seems more like a topic for a documentary to me.
Yeah, totally.
That's exactly it. It's just that it never occurred to me that it wouldn't
yeah.
be.
Yeah, for sure. And it was such a beautiful film. I'm so glad I got to see a film print of it, because one of the lines they kept coming back to throughout the film was love is color, life is color. And then they would cut to mostly women, which owns, gathering natural materials, mostly flowers and grasses, to fill their dye pots, to dye the wool from the sheep they raised. And so there's even a couple scenes where, like, there's a sheep being born, and the lamb's mother is trying to help it walk for the first time. And there's also it's also cut with the scene of a mother going off to give birth by herself, because I'm not that familiar with the culture represented in the film, but it seemed like that was just how it's done when women give birth in this nomadic culture. Like, the entire clan is walking down the road, and this very pregnant woman is all of a sudden like, peace, and she like turns around and is holding her back and is like not making eye contact with anybody. And this is a woman who's given birth like, you know, 7 or 8 times, and she's just like beautifully walking off like, don't talk to me, I know what's happening. And she just goes and gives birth in a field by herself. It's really, really incredible, actually. Wow. But I think one of the best things is just seeing a film like this where it's showing a culture that I think a lot of people, I certainly didn't know anything about this culture and how important the gaba rug making process is to them and how women focused it is. And also showing the dye process as well. And there's a scene where a character passes away and they're saying, life is color, life is color. And they pan over a whole bunch of bundles of dyed yarn that are drying on a rack. And then they pan up to a bunch of yarn that is all black. The previous yarn was colorful like the rainbow, and the next one was black. And they just say, life is color, and they pan up to the black yarn. And then they say death is, and then they say nothing. And a person drops a black ball of yarn into a stream and it floats away. I was like, it was really, really beautiful.
Yeah. Wow.
So if you have the time and don't mind watching a film that doesn't have English subtitles, I recommend even just like scrubbing through it on YouTube or at least checking out the trailer to see the beautiful colors. Anyway, I could go on and on and on about this, but I shan't.
Well, it sounds fantastic.
Well, I mean, yeah. You could. I'm absorbed.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really cool. There was even, sorry, one last thing that's worth mentioning. So in this culture, there's a person who they set up a little schoolhouse for all the children, and the kids are learning their colors. And the teacher, he points to a field where there's all of this yellow grass and flowers. And you see the hand reaching out over the field, and he mimes picking up a bundle of grass and flowers. And then it cuts back, and his hand is holding those flowers. And then it, like, turns into, like, the powder of a dye. And then he explains, like, how colors blend to create other colors. And it's so cool.
It sounds gorgeous.
That is cool.
Yeah. It really is.
Wow.
I'm very grateful to have seen it.
Okay. Whew.
Yeah. Sorry, well, I got very emotional-ish,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Apparently that's the theme of the day.
Single silent
tear. That sounds wonderful.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Well, I've been doing less wonderful crafting only, I mean, not that that was crafting, but yeah, in the movie, clearly it was. But mine has just all been weird, kind of off-season crafting, which is a thing that happens, mm-hmm. especially if you craft professionally, because you're always like months ahead so that things can be published. But obviously it happens,
yeah.
Even if you are working on Christmas gifts and so on. I know someone who is going to be making some knit stockings. So obviously, if you want those in time, you probably need to be starting very soon. But it's been super duper warm here in the Chicago area for the last couple of days. At least to me, it is. Yes. I like don't do well in heat and humidity. But naturally, this was the time to pull out the fleece and make an enormous fleece blanket. And it's just like, oh, so I'm warm just moving it around, taking pictures. And bless my sister's heart, she modeled for me and I had to wrap her up in this blanket in the heat. And she just sat there so patiently and let me take her picture. But this was probably weirdest, like, heat-wise off-season crafting. Normally, I'm doing, like, this is when I'm working on. I've already done Halloween. That's done for me for the year. I mean, I'll get like closer to Halloween and do a few more things, but I've already worked on a Halloween project. So now we get into Christmas mode. And so far, other than this fleece blanket, I have not really hit a lot of Christmas crafting, but the time is upon us. And when I have to do off-season crafting, like especially Christmas, my go-to get into the holiday mood music is to put on Sufjan Stevens' Christmas albums. And so I just put those on repeat.
Oh, that one's really good.
Yeah, and I listen to those, and that helps me be ready for Christmas crafting when it's May, June, July, etc. How about you? when you have to do this weird, like, not traditional time of year crafting, do you have a go-to method for getting in the mood for that?
Well, in my household, and this is a multi-generational rule in on my mom's side of the family, one shall not listen to Christmas music until after Thanksgiving. That's been the rule for literally three generations now on my mom's side. And my mom's name is Carol, and I've always thought that that might be why she's so partial to Christmas, like Christmas carols.
Okay.
I don't know. I love Christmas, too. I will not sugarcoat that in any way.
Or you will sugarcoat it because...
Yes!
Frosting.
Christmas.
Yeah.
I'm just picturing, like, Heidi as Christmas cookie with the little, like, multi-colored sugar sprinkles and... Never mind, that got weird.
I could take a bite out of the cookie for that photo shoot.
Yes.
Because I'm a professional model.
Absolutely.
Now, you guys.
You're a very serious model.
Yeah.
Very serious.
But yeah, like, for when I'm on deadlines, it's I won't break the rule for Christmas music unless I'm really, really stuck in a rut. Because, like, I feel like my grandpa would be, like, watching from heaven being like, that's uncalled for. Because that's what he would say whenever we were in trouble. but instead, I try to stick to, like, I try to, in my head, participate, like, mentally in some kind of Christmas in July vibe. So I try to, like, look through my Pinterest board of everything I pinned, like, last Christmas season to kind of get excited. And I also take it as a fun opportunity to, like, embrace the more, like, colorful vibe that is summer when I'm designing for Christmas, because it's kind of fun because then you, for me at least, since I love color so much, I feel like you end up with a more interesting seasonal palette that isn't just, like, poinsettia, red,
yes,
and green.
Definitely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and I will say, as far as the Christmas music goes, I'm fairly happy to listen to Sufjan's Christmas albums anytime anyway, and so the Christmas crafting is probably a good excuse. It, like, makes it seem, like, at least semi-normal.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I go in a slightly different direction. There's a goth Christmas album, and I can't remember... What is it called? Oh, it's got a really funny name, but it's basically all of the, like, your traditional Christmas carols, but in minor keys.
Oh, cute.
And so it's, like, some of it's very, very beautiful. Like, there's a version of Carol of the Bells that is very haunting. Mm-hmm. And, but that sort of strikes that balance for me, because the holiday season stresses me out, and so having to do off-season crafting for it also stresses me out a lot. And I also don't, like, you guys do much more holiday-specific content than I do, mm-hmm. and so I've got a few ideas kicking around, but I don't need or generally want to plan quite that far ahead. But I'm always in the mood for Halloween,
yeah.
So the slightly creepy Christmas music works.
Nice. Yeah.
So we've been talking about crafting out of season, but what I'm thinking about mostly right now is very seasonal crafting. Like the kind that I always, always, always get sucked into this time of year. And that is the ill-advised vacation and travel sewing. I don't know if you guys do this, but I just can't help myself. I hit less or fewer than 24 hours before either getting on a plane or going to an event, and suddenly I don't have anything to wear. It doesn't really matter if I've already packed. I for sure don't have anything to wear. And I've got all this fabric, you see, and all of these ideas, and... couldn't I just throw together this dress? You know, I've got time, right?
Of course.
Yeah, so I think one of my best examples, and by best I mean worst examples, was last summer my husband and I went to the south of France with his family. And I decided that I needed some really casual, like, just below the knee skirts, and I wrote a pattern, or I guess a tutorial, because it's a self-drafted pattern, but I wrote a tutorial called The Perfect Summer Skirt, and it's an elastic waist skirt with pockets. It's very easy to make, and I have written the tutorial and the pattern. I obviously had already made the paper pattern to fit me, so I was like, you know, I'm just going to pull out some of this fabric that I've got, and I'm going to whip up a couple of skirts. And this was the night before leaving. And it seemed like a good idea until you realize that you need to finish seams. So, yeah, I can construct those skirts really fast. I can construct them very quickly if all I need to do is take a photo of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a problem. What is a problem is then needing to go over all of the seams with a serger or use a serger to begin with, like any of that combination. And it's got pockets, so you need to reinforce them. You need to tack that fabric in place. Like, a bar tack is a great idea if you don't want to stick your hands through pockets. So All of these things, all of these final, like, finishing details, they aren't what you think of when you think of sewing the skirt, but they're the things that make the skirt last. And so I had quickly cut out all of these, like, very few pattern pieces and sewn them all together, and everything was fine. I was just going to finish them up in the morning. So I went to bed that night and then got up in what I thought was plenty of time before the car to the airport was going to get there. As the car pulled up, I am still sewing with, like, stress tears running down my face, trying to get these stupid skirts done. I didn't even need them, but at this point, I'm proving a point. Like, I'm not going to be naked if I don't bring these skirts. And so I finally, like, I am throwing the cover on my sewing machine and, like, trimming off thread pieces and stuffing them in my carry-on on the way out the door. It was this whole thing, like, ugly crying. It was an adventure. And it turns out that I had pulled the worst possible kind of fabric that you could think of for travel skirts. And I couldn't actually wear them in France because I guess I hadn't pre-washed the fabric. So the wrinkles from stuffing them in my carry-on, the sizing had caused them to become basically permanent. I needed to wash and, like, high heat press them for them to release. And that just didn't, like, that was not an option in a vacation home setting. And so I couldn't even wear these things that had caused all of this trouble. And I very, very nearly did it again last weekend when I was going to a graduation in Boston. I didn't, but so that is the thing that I am trying to avoid this season. While everybody else is sewing Christmas crafts, I am trying incredibly, incredibly hard not to make the new thing, or not to sew the charging cable holder, because that happens too. Like, oh, you know, it would be great if I just had this little case that all of these things that I need to bring with me would fit in, that I could just toss in my bag. That would be great. Wouldn't that be great?
That would be great.
It's a trap. It's a trap. Don't do it. I am here to tell you, it's a trap. Molly, do you make things when you're on the way someplace when you shouldn't?
Yes and no. I've had a few things where it seemed like a really good idea to make something as a gift to bring to someone that I'm going to visit.
Oh, yes.
Sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. I have been known to be, like, working, like, on a road trip, like, working in the car on something. That happens. More likely, though, right before a trip is when I decide that's a good time to get a project ready to bring and work on the trip. And so, normally what happens is I have not gotten all of the rest of my stuff together for the trip, but I'm scurrying around getting my craft project ready for the trip, which is, people would think that's the least important thing, but we know that's really the most important thing to have with you is a good project.
You can replace almost anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
you can buy what you need.
Yeah, but you won't have the right yarn with you or your pre-cut hexagons for your English paper piecing and so on. So there it is. That's what I'm usually doing.
Exactly.
Yeah, that one.
And I always start a new project. Like, it isn't ever like I could just pick up these socks that I have a pair of socks that are my knit night socks. I don't know how long I've been knitting them. Probably years. And it's like two at a time socks, and I only bring them to knitting related events that I'm not going to have to pay attention to them. Mm-hmm. Couldn't bring those with me. No. I need to, like, design, and it's almost like I write patterns. My getting ready to travel is just an exercise in how many bad ideas can we have.
Oh my gosh.
New cross stitch pattern? Yep. Yeah. Am I going to, say, design an English paper piecing kit to bring with me? Oh yes. Oh yes. That's how that happened.
But I'm glad that happened, though. That's a good kit.
Oh yeah. Which, for people who have, or are not readers of my blog, I designed an English paper piecing travel kit that has now made the rounds of the crafty internet and continues to be my most popular project to date. And it definitely was born of travel crafting. I don't know what I said it was made, or I don't know what I said inspired it in the post, because I'm pretty sure I didn't cop to that.
But I will say, I do think that I could list like a handful of designs that came about because of working on them on vacation or traveling in some way, and they ended up being some of my best work, I think, because maybe I was in vacation mode.
Definitely.
And I wasn't like, oh, I've got to do this social media post, I've got to do this thing, I've got to do this deadline. I just was like, oh, I am only going to worry about this knitting project. Isn't knitting for just fun great? And then I turn it into a job.
Yes.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yep. Relatable content.
I'm sorry if it's relatable content. I don't wish that on anyone. Well, I guess I wish the success on everyone, mm-hmm. just not the stress that leads
there
up
you
to
go.
It.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, kind of still within the realm of seasonal, very timely seasonal crafting, or maybe less so, depending on how you look at it. We're right on the edge of the 4th of July as this episode is releasing, which kind of brings up some patriotic craft ideas. Certainly, there's always plenty of patriotic craft posts and tutorials on the internet. And I always have I don't know about you guys, I always have mixed feelings about this. My grandma loved the 4th of July. She was always in her full red, white, and blue regalia, and it was all, you know, it was a big deal. So I have really fond, patriotic everything feelings that way. But I don't necessarily think of myself as someone who's very patriotic. I don't always love making things that are red, white, and blue. That doesn't get me excited, and I even tend to kind of pull away from it for a whole lot of reasons. But a few years ago, I created this, it's called the 50 States Stitching Club, and the idea was to feature each of the 50 states in an embroidery pattern, which also is a quilt block to make this large quilt. And this is probably where I get into my most patriotic, is I get very excited about the 50 states and American history and those kinds of things. But when I when I was working on this, I definitely had this, I don't want this to be a red, white, and blue quilt. And when I was talking about the plan, there was this, how could you make a quilt about the 50 states and not have it be red, white, and blue? It was very, like, when I would share the idea, there was kind of this, you're crazy. It's almost like sacrilegious or something. I just didn't want it to be red, white, and blue, because that was so traditional, and I did not want traditional. So similar to Heidi, you saying working on Christmas projects that use different color schemes, I kind of wanted to infuse some of that. I knew that I was going to have something that kind of was a little bit, you know, I needed to have blue in it anyway. I went for more of like an orangey red. And of course there was white in it, but my color palette was way off, and I went for just kind of a different, maybe a little bit Americana, but not red, white, and blue. And think that changed the feeling of it a little bit. There were still people who did the club, and you know, they didn't tell me so, but they probably looked at it and went, why in the world did she not make this in patriotic colors? And gosh darn it, I'm making mine in patriotic colors. And their quilts turned out beautiful. It was not
Yeah. Well, that's the beauty of it. They're allowed to do whatever color they want.
They made the choice they wanted, and it came out wonderfully. But I was not going to have it. So it makes me think. That's terrible. Yeah. Anyway, how do you all feel about all of the patriotic crafts? Do they excite you? Is it just not your thing? What do you think?
I don't know. July's hot, so I'm so grumpy all the time. Like you were saying at the top of the episode. And like you get sunburned, which we've talked about that common thread among the three of us before. Also, I think we're generally inside people. So I mean, as much as I love a barbecue and like 4th of July, like for fireworks and fun stuff, and I think it can inspire some cute ideas, I get way more jazzed about Christmas.
Yeah.
Plain and simple.
Yeah.
Yeah, or Halloween mean, it's... for Haley.
Yeah.
No, yes. Halloween every day. For a while it was, back in my gotha youth.
That's awesome.
But I don't fall into, like, traditional, like, Americana-style crafting usually either. But I do get kind of geeky about voting-related things. Mm-hmm. So, like, around Election Day, I might make something that is, like, go vote inspired or something like that. Mm-hmm. I have been known to sew, going back to Halloween, like, sashes and, like, suffragette sashes or something like that.
That's cool.
Which I think does, there's a lot of patriotism in why you do that sort of thing. But I do have one area where I just truly and unexpectedly geek out, and it is bunting. And what I'm talking about, like, I'm not necessarily talking about the triangle flag bunting that, like, that's all well and good, that's fine. But what I'm talking about is, like, the half-circle swags of fabric that you get. Like, I grew up in a very small town in Michigan, and, like, that town is decked out mm-hmm. for, like, the Memorial Day parade or for 4th of July, and, like, the red, white, and blue fabric, and I just love it. Like, some people are into glitter. I'm into, like, over-the-top bunting. Mm-hmm. And, like, the very, very traditional, like, what you would imagine any small town would look like kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so when I knew that we were going to be talking about the 4th of July when I was researching for this episode, and especially since it's coming right up, I sort of fell down this bunting-related rabbit hole. And so I, of course, found all of the usual tutorials that people had written about doing different kinds of bunting. And I learned, I mean, a thing I guess I knew related to, like, home decor, but I didn't realize that it also applied here, that shape of bunting, the sort of half circle fabric, is called a swag.
What?
Yeah, it's because that is the, like, the swag is hanging fabric that falls in a curve.
Okay. Huh.
And so those, like, individual pieces are called swags. So
I'm envisioning, like, a meme that says, that's like a hip hop meets craft infusion that says, like, swag.
That's really funny.
It's really cool.
I also, when looking at all of these, like, really inspirational different kinds of bunting, so you've got your triangle flags, you've got the swags, which are the ones that I really like, and then many, many other kinds, like, you can do it in paper, you can do, like, just tied fabric, like, it's interesting, and I'll put some links to some of the stuff I liked best in the show notes, but I also then needed to look up what bunting meant. As, like, I know functionally what it is, but why? Like, why is it called that? And I learned something that fellow fabric geeks may find to be interesting is that starting right around the turn of the 17th century, bunting was actually a kind of worsted wool fabric that was used for making ribbons and flags, including like signal flags for the armed forces, like flags and ribbons. And so that was just the fabric term. It was a specific kind of fabric. And so it is to my great relief that it is the specific kind of fabric used to make the kinds of things we call bunting today, because if it weren't, I may have pitched an etymological fit. But I don't have to. We can all take a deep breath. So, I'm not necessarily into Americana crafting, but give me a good primary color bunting, and I will be just overcome with delight.
I'm envisioning, like, Haley, you know, like at 4th of July, there's all these, the fireworks stands by the highway, uh-huh. depending on what state you live in.
Oh, no.
And I envision Haley, like, in, like, not unlike an old timey like circus ringmaster guy, but in like the like lady showgirl leotard version with tails and a top hat, and you're like standing outside this circus tent bunting everywhere.
I'm a bunting siren.
Like, welcome to Haley's Bunting Emporium. We've got flags. We've got swags. What kind of bunting you want? We got it all. $9.99.
Can I have a bunting emporium? Because I feel like, wait, I live in Brooklyn. Yes, I can have a bunting emporium. I can have a bunting emporium right now. Maybe there's already a bunting emporium.
Probably. If you find it, would you please put it in the show notes?
Yes, I'll check for the Brooklyn Bunting Emporium. And since we are currently possibly embarrassing ourselves, maybe now is a good time to,
choo-choo!
You know, all aboard the train of shame.
Train's pulling into the station. Goodness. Chugga, 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 chugga. I love the train of shame.
Well, the thing that I love about the train of shame, though, is that it really feels so much better to just hop on board, air your dirty laundry out the train window, and it's all good.
Yes. Oh, good Lord. You know what we need? You know what we need? We need the train of shame to have a bunting on it, just because that seems really relevant.
With the dirty laundry. I will make bunting out of the dirty laundry that we're airing. I've solved the problem. I'm turning the dirty laundry into something gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. Into some swag.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so the train of shame is here. And I think we all have a car in the train of shame this go around. So this baby blanket that has come up in most episodes of this show, and I think it was the other entry I had for the train of shame, the other ticket on the train of shame. So at this point, I must confess that the original Entrelac baby blanket that I discussed on this podcast has been abandoned. Abandoned Aww. Blanket. Because... Don't worry. This kid is going to get a baby blanket. The thing is, though, I'm dumb. And I'm a knit designer. And apparently, when I finish projects for, like, my blog or for a magazine deadline or whatever, they go in my series of Rubbermaid tubs, because I live in a basement, mm-hmm. and so they're all stored in tubs that have all sorts of moth-proofing things now, thanks to Haley. And
you're welcome.
The thing is, though, they go into these tubs, and I have, like, 5 of them. I have far too many. I should really do a de-stash or something. So, I decided, because I'm a genius, there was literally a light pink blanket in this finished object tub vortex that I could just take out, give a little quick block to make it like extra fresh, and gift it to my niece. And her nursery is the traditional like baby light pink with some yellow. So it's perfect.
Yay.
That's awesome.
So
I love it when that happens.
Yeah.
I never remember any of the things that I've made.
Yeah. So I'm dumb. or I just have
well,
like,
obviously
amnesia.
Not.
And
Maybe it's like, speaking of babies, maybe it's like when a woman gives birth and then she forgets about the pain. Maybe I just like birth all of these knit and crochet designs into the world. And then my brain gaslights me into forgetting that all that work went into them. And they're just in this little box. So, yeah. Anyway, that Enchilac blanket, I don't know if I'll ever even touch again. I might literally light it on fire so that its cottony ghost can haunt me for the rest of my days. Oh. How about you, Haley? What's on your car of the train of shame?
I also have a yarn-related car aboard this train. So the vacation to France that I was telling you guys about earlier, I started a brand new project on that vacation. It's been now, I worked on it a couple of times on vacation, but it was the kind of project that I needed to count for. So it didn't really work very well with a group trip. And so it has now been sitting on the table in my living room since I got back from the trip. Like, in its, like, sealed, plastic-lined project bag. And so I finally had to come to the realization this week that I hate it. Like, I love the yarn that I chose, but it's the wrong yarn for the project. And I could have powered through and finished it, but I wouldn't have liked it. I would have ended up giving this thing away that was going to take a long time to make anyway. And I like the yarn, and I'm going to use it for something else. And so what I need to do, and I made this decision earlier this week, I have not yet ripped it out. It's coming. There's a frogging upon us, but I also decided that I needed to make a video of frogging it because I thought it would make, like, be a really satisfying video to watch. In like time lapse and not like real time. But, and so now that I have given myself another job related to it, there it sits. And I've already gotten the new yarn because I don't want to abandon the project. I just, one of the colors needs to go. And once it's gone, everything else is fine. Mm-hmm. And so I've got the new yarn. I'm all ready. And yet. I'm going to do it, though. I'm going to.
You can do it.
It's going to happen. Thanks.
Yeah.
All right, Molly. How about you? You getting on this train?
Caboose.
I don't think mine is not nearly.
I don't know why that's so funny.
Just like the other day on Instagram, someone was talking about getting her featherweight sewing machine all beautiful and ready to go. And she was sharing a coupon code for this one shop online that sells like the LED bulbs that you can replace with it so that it's not, it doesn't burn hot on your, you know, when you lift your arm up under the machine and bump that. And I was so excited because I'd been planning on buying one of these light bulbs for my featherweight. But the train of shame part of this is that I've had my featherweight for several years and I've never actually plugged it in and run it. And it just sits there in its box. Like I'll have, and I'm like nervous about pulling it out and using it. And I feel so like I'm a bad featherweight owner.
Oh, Molly, they're glorious.
I know. I was so excited to get it. And then I was like, but I don't really know. And what if something happens when I start it up? And that's stupid. But there
you know what,
is.
Molly? I have two and I love them. And I would be more than happy to like jump on Skype with you and support you through this. And also, can I please have the coupon code?
Yes, I will. I will.
I for sure need one of
those. Okay, I will pass that along to you.
Well, with that, I should probably say here, we should invite our readers all aboard the train of shame, too.
Yes.
Yes.
Because I'm sure we are not the only people who have these things. And actually, I know for a fact we're not, because when we posted an Instagram asking people to fess up a few weeks ago, there was a lot of engagement and relatability.
There
with
were
that
good
sentiment.
Ones. Yeah.
Yeah. So yes. What, Haley, what is our email address that people could send stories to?
It is podcast@veryseriouscrafts.com.
Awesome. All right. Well, with that, I think we're good for this episode.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, see you ladies next time.
Yeah. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. You've been listening to the Very Serious Crafts podcast. If you loved this episode, please share it with a friend who's as serious about crafts as we are. Thanks.